Siren Radio.
So, can it be true? Can British people actually be the most ungrateful citizens in Western Europe? And that can't end well in any way, shape or form. Recent research commissioned by consultant, coach, writer and speaker George Georgian suggests that only a third of people said they would be happy and pleased if someone they knew won the lottery. The remainder admitted they would be secretly unhappy and ungrateful for what they have, or would use their friend's good fortune to ask for money. George, this is a very damning report in terms of the state of Britishness, really. I mean, what's happened to the stiff upper lip, or is this an aspect of it?
I have no idea. I'm still reeling from the results myself. I expected it to be bad, but not this bad. So yes, we have to sort of dig deeper here. But I suspect there's a lack of self-love has probably got a lot to do with it.
I mentioned the strap line that I've certainly used over the years, which is maintaining the attitude of gratitude and actually being grateful, even when you actually feel as though the whole world is against you, is so important, not only for our mental well-being, but also to kind of just keep going through that whole system. As Churchill said, the important thing if you're going through Hades is to keep on going. And that sort of notion of actually starting off small and building up from your own particular approaches to life is surely critical.
No, absolutely, and I think you've hit the hammer on the nail there, attitude of gratitude. Being grateful is an attitude, pure and simple, and there's sort of three levels of gratitude, if you like, very quickly. One is our sort of social construct of being polite. There's a reason why this was created, is so that people can get on well with each other, but it's a social construct. The next genuine gratitude, as it were, would be being grateful for all the good things we have. You know, the people we love, the things we like, being just grateful for nature and so on. And one of the exercises for doing that is this 21-day exercise of gratitude that one does. In that, one of the things that they do is ask you to remove somebody you love from your life. And imagine what it would be like not having them around. And once you've done that, you recognize, you know, should you be grateful for that person? And that changes perspectives, that changes attitudes. But then there's the third one, which you touched on earlier, Alex, and that is being grateful even for the crises in our lives, because crises are when we actually grow. And that's what our existence on this planet is all about, is everything grows. Plants grow, animals grow, we have to grow. If we don't grow, we're stunted. And when you become complacent, you're stunted, you can't grow. And so being grateful for crises in our lives is important, because it's the crises that push us forward. And just to give you an illustration very quickly, how did I come about this? Was I, just under 3 years ago, I went on a 30-day silent retreat up in North Wales. And in those 30 days of silence, you do audits on your life, you know, all the good things, all the bad things. And I'm a writer, so I write everything down, and then I go back and look over it. And on looking over it, I recognized that I would not have had the opportunities in my life without the crises.
George, you've raised a couple of key issues there, which I want to actually pursue, but we welcome to the studio now somebody we're always grateful for, because it's the fabulous Chloe Rose. How are you, Chloe?
Hello, I'm very good, thank you.
Now, Chloe, some might say we've got heaps to be grateful for. You're the current Miss Lincolnshire. You're a great singer, songwriter. You put all things together. You've been listening to George talking about gratitude. Do you chime with this? I mean, I'm still shocked by the fact that British people are apparently the most ungrateful folk in Western Europe.
I know, that's so sad to think that's true, isn't it, really? I think it's always important to be very grateful in life, because, you know, things happen, don't they, all so suddenly that you don't expect. So you've got to make the most out of life, really.
Yeah.
Just take everything, you know, don't take anything for granted, just be positive.
And it's that energy, George, that kind of gets Chloe a whole range of things from that point of view.
Yes.
That's just one aspect from that point of view. But again, it's deep-rooted in our psychology that even though you feel as though, oh, we're all doomed, if you say that, you get more doom and gloom. If you're an Eeyore, you'll get more Eeyore-like material. If you actually can focus on, however tiny it might be, just the teeniest bit of positive, then it works. I mean, presumably, I mean, you, Chloe, you've had times where you've been at not rehearsals, but you've actually been at auditions and things, and you just thought, what's going on, etc. But yeah, you keep going.
Oh, you've got to. I mean, you get disappointments all the time. And I think being a singer-songwriter and that kind of thing, people that want to do my kind of job, you've got to keep going and going and going and going. Keep knocking on the doors, and hopefully someone will, you know, will say one day, yeah, they've got something. Mm. You know, you've just got to keep going.
And dare I say it, George, isn't that kind of a good aspect for life as well from that point of view, that keep on going, keep on keeping on, if you like, is essential, unless you want to just give it all up and just say, oh, I give up now completely. Just lie down and just become an end of everything.
No, I mean, you're both spot on. I would just add one thing for Chloe here to do, which I think will help her in her career, is... try to create new memories in your mind. You know, we all have past memories. Nobody knows how to work future memories, but yeah, they actually work. So if you imagine that you're in a stadium with 20,000 people, and yeah, you're there, you're singing, imagine it. Imagine the lights, the heat, the noise, the smell of the stage. Just literally put all the five senses into your imagination as you imagine yourself out there in the future, and then bring that in into your emotion. Feel that. How do you feel being out there? And once you emotionalize that, your subconscious mind holds on to it. And imagine this every night before going to bed for the next 3 months. You will make it a reality. And remember where this all started, Chloe.
That is fantastic advice. I am going to do that every night now.
You must.
I feel...
And you will do it.
I feel like when you describe the story, you know, when you're about visualising these new memories, this future, it was making me really happy about it. So if I was doing that every night, think how positive you'd feel, especially when you wake up in the morning.
You'll wake up a whole different person next morning.
Yeah, I get that, definitely.
It's one of the reasons why Spirit of Gratitude Crises Are Opportunities was flagged up by New York Times bestselling author Peggy McCall as a profound book and a testimony of strength, courage and faith that reinforces the power that gratitude brings to our lives. Wonderful stuff. Clearly, George, I would recommend georgejerjian.com. That's GEORGEJERJIAN.com to find out more details about that. Is the prognosis good for British folk? I mean, 41% being grateful for the UK's political stability, less than a third actually felt fortunate to live in a relatively safe environment. I mean, that's got to change, hasn't it? We've got to be more positive.
I think we will. I think actually the Brits always come up during a crisis. We always do best in a crisis. And the crises that we have right now with Brexit and all that sort of stuff that's changing the course and direction of our country is going to change us, and it's going to bring the best out of us. All the creatives, you know, we have everything here.
And when you bear in mind 100 years ago, we were battling in the Great War, as it was referred to, the War to End All Wars. We've at least moved on from there. So at least Chloe isn't having to entertain the troops, shall we say, in Flanders Fields. So, yeah, good stuff
know
on that basis.
You never know.
You never know. That's it.
Alex, just one other thing, if I may plug this. It's probably easier for your audience to go to amazon.co.uk and just type in Spirit of Gratitude, Crises or Opportunities, and the book will come straight up.
Indeed. And, of course, as Professor Sheila the Baroness Hollins actually said in her role as Professor of Psychiatry at the University of London, there are many gems in the book, including ideas to inspire and encouragement to persevere. We've actually got our trial guinea pig person in Chloe, who's going to actually work through that. I think it's only right we actually have a Chloe Rose number to actually see us out for this particular segment. But two final questions. George, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Totally. Mind-blowing.
So the next critical question is, would you be kind enough to join us again in the very near future and keep us appraised of the attitude of gratitude?
I would love to. Invite me, please.
That will be in the post, or the email, or the wing, or through the actual temporal spirits. A reminder, Spirit of Gratitude, Crises Are Opportunities. I think a round of applause for George Georgian. Yes!
Yes!
Thank you so much.
Lost will be found, and sorrow built will be bound. cracks unfold this darkest hour. Feel this love I used to hold. Oh, crashing through falling dreams, the darkness I've seen, and all that you were, you brought your. Left your shadow behind, golden dreams. It's not as it seems when you're holding on to the love that's gone. All these golden dreams buried in the sand, all the fears they breathe, bled you dry. Fading truth and no regret. Broken thoughts that fill my head. But I saw you in my sleep. And I left you.
Gives me chills every time. Really wonderful. And, of course, the magical Chloe Rose there. Who's in the studio at present? Isn't that exciting, Anna Lewis?
Hello.
Exactly. Where do we find you today, Anna? Whereabouts in London are you?
Another exciting part of the world, mm-hmm. Hammersmith. Hammersmith Broadway.
Oh.
It's the centre of the
Well, it may be, it probably is in so many ways, and Hammersmith, obviously, it's almost as exciting as Waterloo, which is where you've also connected with us, Hounslow, and all of these grand scenarios there. I mean, Chloe, being Miss Lincolnshire, do you ever sort of feel as though, yeah, really, Hounslow and Tooting Beck, etc., these are magical names far, far away?
Oh, I don't know.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's quite a lot. I can understand that. And rightly so. So what have you been doing this week, Anna? What sort of things have you been getting up to?
Oh, just this morning was interesting. I go to a class that's organised by WEA, which is it's short for something, but it's an adult class, and it's looking at London lowlife. And I was about to make my way to Shoreditch today to look at an area around there that's been demolished since the 1900s, that's given a title called Child of the Dago. And Dago book is centred around a part of Shoreditch where there was a road called Nichols Yard. And I couldn't go there. Then I realised how long it took to get there, so I decided just to come to Hammersmith instead.
Well, that makes perfect sense. Well, we weren't sure whether we actually had one or two gremlins on the line there for the moment. It's taking out all sorts of other bits and pieces. Moving on to all sorts of other routines. Chloe, have you got any questions you'd like to put Anna, who used to be our Jersey correspondent, but then she decided to do all sorts of other things and leave the island of Jersey and become ensconced in London. And basically, when it comes to historical quirky bits, ooh, tombstones and such like, you couldn't have a finer soul to actually go to. As we say in the strapline, Anna Lewis with some more thoughts from the suburbs of London.
Wow. What have you got coming up?
Well, there's some... just this course now that lasts for 5 weeks, and there's a lot of reading to do, so it's a bit like being a student again, if you know what I mean. The only problem is actually ordering the books online seems to take forever, and fortunately some of them are online, like the Trials of the Jago is online, but the problem is I like a physical book. I don't know if I'm can't.
You like that physicality. That's an important thing. You know, it's this whole intangible system. Who knows what can happen? Anna, we've just been talking to author and life coach George Jurjan, and the recent survey that suggested that British folk are generally more ungrateful than those in other Western European countries. Is that something which chimes with yourself, or are you always grateful just to be here?
I think it's very easy in this day and age where we can travel a lot to make comparisons, but they're actually meaningless, I think, to live in the country.
Again, we're beginning to lose you there. But Chloe, did you find that, I mean, in Grimsby, are people grateful, or do you get the feeling that, oh, Lord, here we are, Grimsby again?
I mean, I'm very proud of my town.
So you should be. So you should be.
I think it's... I mean, it's an odd thing, isn't it? I think wherever you live, you're going to get some people that aren't so much, you know, grateful. Mm. But then you'll get loads of people that are as well. You know, we're all different, aren't we?
And that's what makes life worthwhile.
Exactly. But, you know, I think there's good places, there's bad places wherever you live, you know.
And that, Anna, is the philosophy of Chloe Rose. In a nutshell, put
in
together
nutshell.
Perfectly, there are good places, there are not so good places, but we still have to be grateful. Anna, hopefully that'll help you through where you happen to be in London, which isn't Hounslow, it's not Haringey. Where exactly? Remind us again where you are. I think she's dropped off. She has literally dropped off. We've lost the signal completely. She's probably gone underground. It's a thought. Never mind. Anna Lewis will doubtless return at her normal time slot in the very near future. William Coles will be up in a matter of seconds from now. Chloe, we're going to keep appraised of what's going on. Miss Lincolnshire, have you had the... I mean, what's going on with that now? I mean, you always will be Miss Lincolnshire. How's the next sort of stage going? Have you had the sort of the thing for Miss UK and such like?
Yes, the Miss Great Britain final happened September the 14th.
I think I voted for you. Really, certainly I did.
You did. You did indeed.
Right.
And it was absolutely amazing. We had three different rounds. We had a bikini round, an evening wear round, an interview round with the judges as well, mm-hmm, about why we would be good for Miss Great Britain. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just absolutely happy to be in the final. I mean, you know, mind about winning the actual crown.
You should have, obviously, but that's by the by.
You are very kind to me.
It's the only way. But at least you share that now with Eva McDonald. You've both actually reached that sort of stage. So
that's fabulous, isn't it? That Eva's Miss Lincolnshire has been
Miss Lincolnshire
as well.
It's a bit like the President of the United States in many ways. You know, you sort of always be introduced as Miss Lincolnshire.
Donald Trump.
So, no, I don't think so. No, perhaps not the best way forward, it has
probably
to be.
Probably not.
But then again, if we are talking Donald Trump, why not go Disney?
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. A monster from a slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. The scene was rocking, all were digging the sounds. Igor on chains, backed by his baying hounds. The coffin bangers were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five. They played the monster mash. It was a graveyard smash. get caught on in a flash.
They played the match.
They played the monster mash. The zombies were having fun. The party had just begun. The guests included Wolfman, Dracula, and his son. Out from his coffin, Drac's voice did ring. Seems he was troubled by just one thing. He opened the lid and shook his fist and said, whatever happened to the Transylvania twist? It's now the monster mash. And it's a graveyard smash. It caught on in a flash. It's now the monster mash. Now everything's cool. Drac's a part of the band. And the monster mash is the head of the land. For all the living, this mash was meant to. When you get to my door, tell them Goofy sent you. Then you can monster mash. And do a graveyard smash. You'll catch on in a flash. Then you can monster mash. Let's go. What a party. Hey, Dracula, listen. I want to bite your neck. Just joking. Hey, Wolfman, need a shave there. Frankie, how you doing? Boy, you're a growing bigger every day.
I know, it's scary. But then again, it is All Hallows' Eve. It is trick-or-treat time. It is time where we simply have to turn around and with a little bit of magic that comes through, we say the immortal phrase. Or even more. Sometimes, you see, strange and spooky things happen, William Coles, including getting a particularly weird sound when we had indeed meant to orate your ident like so.
William Coles, romantic novelist, political journalist and regular midweek drive correspondent from the capital of Scotland, with or without his prehistoric shark's teeth.
Exactly. Always critical. And just in case you were thinking, well, what about Chloe Rose's ident? Well, of course, who could ever forget?
Happy trails.
Jeez. That's why she's in the studio. Yes, Sir William, Chloe Rose, Miss Lincolnshire is back in the studio with us, and Ben is waiting outside. Chloe, could I ask you, whilst you're doing various other things, to open the door and let Ben in?
Absolutely.
He's not a vampire. He won't bite, but he is from Brighton, OK? And he's been dealing with Chris Packham, so that's always stressful in various other bits and pieces. Will she remember to press the green button before actually opening the door? Who knows? It's all very exciting. William, how's life in Edinburgh?
Excellent. I'm getting my Halloween gear on and I'm going off guising very shortly with my children, or perhaps the younger one.
You see, this is what I call the traditional Celtic soul. I mean, clearly it's gone in there because guising, from which, of course, we get the word disguise, is something which has its roots back in Celtic knowledges and roots and histories from where you actually have jack-o'-lantern and so on. Isn't that a lot easier, though, to carve a pumpkin as opposed to carve other root vegetables? Because people used to carve all sorts of things into their root vegetables, but pumpkins were seen as much easier.
They used to have a go with Swedes, I believe.
Yeah, but obviously other Nordic and Scandinavian countries are available. I'm sorry, I couldn't resist it. Blame it on all sorts of other bits and pieces. Ben is settling himself down. He's had an exciting time. How was Monsieur Chris Packham, please?
He's got a very good taste in cars. That's what I've concluded.
Nice. There we are. Life continues. Anyway, we've set the scene so far about gratitude. Do you consider yourself somebody who's very grateful, William?
I'm eternally grateful for all these blessings in my life,
Exactly. Sorry, I just had a message from Anna Lewis saying connection cut. Not quite sure why. I'm afraid. Oh, no, I think it's just not quite sure why I'm afraid. Maybe she's afraid. We can't help you, Anna. You're in London. Get up to Lincoln. That's all. I don't know what's going to happen here. I mean, Chloe was thinking it might have been her mobile phone. I don't know. William, have you actually liked Chloe Rose on how many social media platforms are you?
Instagram,
yes.
Facebook, Twitter.
Yes.
YouTube.
And the photograph that has just been taken, which you've circulated
it's
already.
It's got to be Instagram. It's the new thing. It really is.
I'm sure that's
right. Is that going to be the one with the sausages?
Exactly, Lincolnshire sausages.
He remembers, you remember. The listener probably wishes that she could forget, but never mind. It doesn't matter. Yes, Ben, Chloe with her famous Lincolnshire sausages.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like I missed something.
It is quite extraordinary. Moving on, we won't mention Art Williams' namesake because he's having enough challenges at this particular time, but we're getting an interesting sort of range of comments on that. I think it's fair to say, from a journalist point of view, you wouldn't have necessarily said that's the most sensible thing to say, would you?
I would not.
No, that's all right. I just wanted to get that quite clear, that the views from William Scholes about William Sidwell's comment, not the most sensible thing to say. I think, Ben, you'd agree with that.
Yeah. Well, maybe he just wants to be topical. Maybe he just wants people to tumour. Maybe he wants to just stir up stuff, you know. He got a good reaction. He got the best reaction that they've had in ages.
That's true. But still, you know, I mean, Chloe could have actually been Miss Great Britain if she'd bounced on.
Imagine that. No, I'm dreaming here. Really am.
Personally, I think you were very brave to do the bikini contest, because I personally would not have done that myself. But, you know,
honestly, I agree, because I shocked myself. I really did shock myself doing it.
It was quite extraordinary. Still, it's nice to see that midweek drivettes. Good news, Chloe. Like Ben, you are in next year's midweek drivette calendar.
Yes!
You've made it.
Fantastic!
Takes a lot to get to that.
Exactly. I mean, do you still have yours from there?
I do indeed.
Good.
That's it. Takes pride and place in my room.
Well, there we are. Well, Chloe is in there. I was looking at the proofs today, and we've pretty much
sent all the way to Bentley as well, wasn't it?
It was indeed.
It was.
Exactly. William. Would you like to speak to Chloe? Would you like to speak to Ben? Would you like to just give us 2 or 3 minutes of the thoughts of William Coles? It's entirely up to yourself. Before you actually go out guising in disguise for Halloween, what are your children dressed as, and are you dressed up as anything as well?
I'm about to dress up as a zombie. My youngest son is dressed up as it's kind of zombie-like, but his mother brought him back a fez from Morocco, and so he is a zombie with a fez.
He's Tommy Cooper zombie.
Exactly. Tommy. Just like that.
Yeah, just like that. Exactly like that, yeah.
You see the joys of the creativity that we can bring you through doing these mobile phone connections. It's just wonderful. Actually, Chloe, do you have any questions for William Coles? Or Bill Coles? I mean, I don't know. It's whatever, really.
How are things for you, William? How is your life going? Is it good? I'm sure it is.
It's excellent. I mean, the clocks have gone back. We all start hibernating up in Scotland around now. So yeah, it's good.
Good.
And when's your next novel coming out, William?
Novels now. We're going down the route of screenplays first. When the screenplay is greenlit, then we do the novel. It's a new, unique, new way of doing it. And my wife says to me, "Has anyone else done it like this before?" And I said, "I don't think they have." But she says, "Well, maybe there's a reason."
There is a precedent, because Arthur C. Clarke, in collaboration with Stanley Kubrick, when they did 2001 A Space Odyssey, Arthur actually wrote the novel based on the screenplay. So there has been a precedent back in 1968, 50 English years ago, William. So,
right, OK, I'll tell her that one. That will shut her up, no matter what.
It's not to sort of end communication. It's just a point to actually say that it's not necessarily the sole precedent for the whole thing. There are other things that have worked through that.
Right. So can I ask, Clay, what's the highlight of being sort of Miss Lincolnshire? Do you get into the Miss UK contest, the Miss World contest? What happens next?
Well, it's the Miss Great Britain contest, but I've just done that now. But basically, I suppose one of the highlights of it is you're able to help your community, you know, get involved, help everyone in your local area, and basically, being a singer as well, I get to put the sash on. So it's fantastic.
What's not to love when you've got the sash to put on? And as I say, had it not been for your singing routine and, of course, Sound and Country Vision, you wouldn't be here today, of course.
I know. It's dreadful.
It is dreadful. Lungs is the tune that's coming up next, Ben. If you haven't heard Lungs by Chloe Rose before, you're in for a treat, and I can say that categorically. We've got some various other treats that are actually out there as well, which I pass over. Chloe is the keeper of the treats. She will determine on behalf of your behaviour, do you deserve
trick
a chocolate? Do you not get
is
a chocolate?
You get loads of chocolates.
Yeah. Right. It's treats galore. Yeah. We're not Scottish. Oh, sorry, there we are. It's just alienated everybody north
of Halloween.
No, it's very... William, I'm going to see if Chloe can remember those last two questions. I'm sure she can. So would you like to sort of deliver
I'm sure she can. She's an old pro.
Exactly. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
I've loved it. Thank you so much for asking, Chloe.
Good. And would you like to come back and chat on the show again?
Yes, please, just as soon as the boss asks me.
Fantastic.
That kind of positivity that actually just makes life a little bit more worth living, I think.
You're listening to the Midweek Drive on Siren FM, guaranteed to keep you safe from giant lizards.
In the day of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, with the joys of electricity, there were scares aplenty, particularly echoed in the classic It's Alive. But it seems that actually, even in the 21st century, 200 years later, when it comes to Halloween, it's really scary to actually have your electricity bill. Oh no! How can we address this? Well, only by calling upon Britain's official First Lady of the Paranormal, the astoundingly wonderful, supremely talented Yvette Fielding. How are you, Yvette?
I love you. Thank you. You can come again.
Oh, there we are. The way you actually knocked in the inside number nine, so it's just outrageous. You're just even more wonderful.
It's thank you.
From one success to another, and from Smart Energy GB, the wonderful Robert Cheesewright. How are you, Robert?
I'm good, thank you.
Excellent. Yvette, let's talk a little bit about this particular research that suggests that, yeah, it's actually not just setting up a monster of an electricity bill to actually create your monsters, but it's very frightening as well when you have to open that bill.
Oh, do you know, I've had the experience myself, which is
is exactly why I am giving the smart energy meter a huge thumbs up. I live in a very old house, and it's quite sort of big and rambling. It's grade two listed, so of course, you know, there's lots of creaks and, you know, all the energy that you're pushing out and everything. It costs us a lot of money. So of course, when I get the bill through the post, I have to be honest, it's more scary than me spending time doing a Ouija board down in the cellar of a haunted house. Mm. So when the letter comes, I actually had it sat on the countertop for about a week before I was brave enough to open it. And I do know that a lot of people, in fact, there's nearly a fifth of Brits, 17% of us are actually, you know, they've done exactly the same thing. They're really frightened about the energy bill coming in. So, of course, to have a smart meter in the home makes perfect sense to me, and because I don't want to have that in my home. I went through an awful time sort of trying to work out why it was costing me so much money, on the phone for hours with my energy provider, trying to sort it out, getting it down to a monthly payment plan, all of this kind of stuff. And then, of course, they're guessing, it's an estimate, your estimated bill. And it's never right. So, of course, that's where it gets really scary. So I thought, you know what, let's have a go at this smart meter. And my goodness me, smart energy has given me a little sort of, what would you call it, Rob?
The in-home display.
That's the in-home display. Well, it's fabulous, and it's so easy to use, and it's really, really, it's great for making you feel a lot better, because you know exactly how much energy you're using. Like, you know, you've got your telly on standby. Really? Does it cost that much money to leave your telly on standby? Now you can see how much you're using, and you can turn it off. And if you're on a budget plan, you know, you know how much you're spending each month. You can see when you're getting up towards your maximum amount spend, so you can tailor it to exactly how much you want to spend. And for me, that's like a breath of fresh air. So I don't want any more horrible monsters, you know, under my bed in a bill form popping up and going, this is how much, you know, it's going to cost you. So for me, it really is exciting, and you know, I'm looking forward to becoming a little bit of a boffin, a little bit of a Rob who sat opposite me, who is a boffin on these things.
Well, Rob, let's turn to you this moment then, in terms of the campaign for a smarter Britain. Is it a case of you sort of think, well, okay, we can see what's costing the energy. Does that actually help us say, okay, as Yvette's just said, turn your television off the standby mode, otherwise it'll just keep ticking on and ticking on and so on? Is this a way in which you're literally just identifying where the problems are?
Absolutely that, and it's this thing about human behaviour is, you know, we'd all like to be able to do a bit more and do these things, but sometimes until you get the prompt, you don't know, and it's why runners time every single run they do, and that's how they improve. For me, mine's just on the table as I'm going out of the house, and it reminds me when I've left something on as I'm going out the door, so I'm not just wasting energy when I'm not even in the house to use it. And the people that have got them, on average, they're already saving 3% of their energy. So we know it works. And it's just those little reminders, and it's those little things that all add up to save us quite a lot of money, but also save the environment, which is really important, and save us from those horrible, estimated, scary bills that we don't really need or deserve.
No, we don't.
Well, I do believe that most ectoplasmic occurrences tend to be accompanied with a drop in temperature and so on. So
that
could be a whole range of things there. Yeah.
Put the heating on.
Yeah, exactly. I was just thinking, where are we going with respect to this? But I do want to talk about the energy monsters, Yvette, because this is a new spooky tale that you've actually put together to explain those shortcomings of traditional energy meters.
Yeah, it's a fabulous poem. Read it a few days ago, and I was completely immersed in it. It's a beautiful, beautiful poem, and it just sums everything. I want to say beautiful, it's beautifully written, but it's actually...
Is it like an Edgar Allan Poe tapping like a raven?
Yeah, exactly.
From the 21st century?
There you go. And it's so true. You know, those energy monsters are underneath your bed. You know, they can frighten you. You don't know when they're going to, you know, pop up and scare you, you know, with how much it's costing you to put energy into your home. And we don't want those energy monsters in our home anymore, you know. And by having a smart meter in your house, you won't have them. You know, nothing will be a horrific surprise anymore, and you'll know exactly where you're at and how much money you're spending. So this poem, if anybody wants to listen to it, you go to the website, which is smartenergygb.org/monsters. And there you can hear this wonderful poem, a little bit spooky for this time of year, which is what we want.
Robert, this is going out on Halloween itself, All Hallows Eve. Who knows what could be happening from that point of view. Are you frightened yourself by anything other than energy bills? Is it a case of, don't bring me any trick-or-treaters, don't talk to me about ghosts? You know, it's just too scary. What worries yourself?
Oh, it's spiders. Every time. I'm just like, you know, a quarter of Brits are terrified of spiders, and I'm definitely one of those. I live with my wife and my daughter, so I'm the designated spider catcher. But, you know, I get the biggest glass I can get and hold it at arm's length and then sort of run out of the house, to not have to get it on.
Screaming like a girl.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm the worst when it comes to spiders. Heights, I'm not good with heights. And the phone ringing. I'm petrified of the phone ringing.
Really?
Yeah, it's either PPI or...
Oh, I see what you mean.
Or if it's late at night, I worry something's awful's happened. You know, I never want to hear the phone ringing.
I get you.
Get it.
I mean, who would have thought we'd actually sort of have people scared? But well, I suppose I can understand, yes, the PPI monster could be a whole new... And that's another phone link entirely.
Yes.
And what about yourself, Yvette? I mean, clearly, as we said at the start, Britain's first lady of the paranormal, you moved on from what was probably hyper-scary Blue Peter material all the way through to a whole new world. And any sort of moments where you thought, or was it just working with Steve Pemberton and Reese Shearsmith?
Lovely gentleman, incredibly talented. What sort of things scare me more so than ghosts and obviously energy bills? I suppose, yeah, spiders used to scare me until I went into the jungle, and now I'm not so scared of them anymore. I could come to your house, Rob, and I would rid you of those spiders.
Would you eat them?
No.
Okay.
That's one thing I couldn't do.
Rob, she said she'd actually sort the problem. She didn't say she'd eat the problem, for goodness sakes.
I was just trying to remember I'm a celebrity.
Yeah.
They ended up doing all the critters, they ended up eating them.
Yeah. I did have a tarantula milkshake.
There you go.
There you go. And something that might make you a bit goosebumpy this time of year is they made me drink the milkshake, and for days afterwards I could feel the little hairs on the back of my throat. Oh, he's gone.
Yeah.
He's gone.
Can't be doing with that.
Yeah. See, this is clearly why Ant and Dec are no longer a couple anymore. It's just a whole range of things from that point of view. It's a very scary thing from that point of view. A reminder, please, once again, Yvette, where's the best place to go if people are listening to this and they want to find out more about smart meters, etc.?
It's smartenergygb.org. Any information that you want about smart meters, smart energy, please go to that website. If you're interested in listening, and I do advise that you do, because it is a lovely poem for this time of year, Energy Monsters, please go to smartenergygb.org/monsters and enjoy. Mwah!
It's been as we knew it was going to be awesome. We got two phone questions. These are the scary ones. First of all, have you both had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Has it been okay for you, Yvette and Rob?
Been
great fun, yeah.
Why would it not be?
Well, then the next question, of course, is, can we prevail upon you to join us again with the Children of the Night? What sweet music they make. Will you join us again on the programme?
Of course. I love that voice. Fabulous.
Yeah, well done.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm not patronising at all in other sorts of ways. Sorry?
She likes you.
Oh, well, we just carry on regardless. It is the Yvette Fielding. And online now, at her very own house Halloween party. It's Kira Olsbrook. How are you, Kira?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. I'm on door duty, so it's always interesting.
Well, door duty in Derbyshire. I can see that both Ben and Chloe Rose, both in the studio here, are intrigued by that.
Door duty? What nightclub are you?
Exactly.
it sounds a bit dodgy, doesn't it?
So, I mean, are you actually saying to anybody who comes along to the Olsbrook door in Ilkeston, Derbyshire, I'm sorry, you're not on the list, go away, have a tarantula?
Tempted, very tempted. No, we've had... It's quite shocking, to be honest, because a lot of them are only 6 or 7 years old, and there was one kid, and he had a Jason mask on,
mm-hmm.
and it had blood on it and everything, and he just peeked around the corner, around the garage. We've got a little, veranda bit, and he just peeked his head round. There was no one there.
No.
The next minute, he just saw his little head with a little plastic knife, went trick or treat, and closed the door. Just started to close the door, and I was like, I can't do that, it's only 7.
Well, you could. But
I could.
You're a Madrid drivette. Technically, you could do anything, you know. I mean, it has to be said, Ben, that Kira might also be appearing in the calendar next year.
Oh, you made it.
It looks highly likely. Chloe, Kira has yet to meet the awesomeness of your good self. She was devastated when she couldn't. She's at a Halloween party, basically, tonight. And next week is her birthday. She's coming in to do the show on her birthday.
Oh, I hope you have a wonderful birthday. And you can still enjoy it here. You know, spread the joy. Yeah.
Exactly.
We shall bring some
treats.
Except
we'll eat the chocolates.
Exactly. You know, honestly, that box is nearly finished now.
Well, you know, really? it's treats always from the point of view of the Midweek Drive. That's the important thing. But have you got any questions? Have you ever been to Ilkeston in Derbyshire?
I've never been.
Well.
Don't go.
All right, let's sweep it around. Kira, have you ever been to Grimsby in Lincolnshire?
I've heard of it, but I've never been.
It's not so bad. The fish and chips are fantastic. Mm. It's not as grim as it sounds.
You know, Ilkeston, I can just offer you beer bottles on the front grass in the morning and like people falling asleep on park benches.
The Ilkeston Tourism Board.
Well.
Exactly, you know, that's what you need to know.
See, this is what we always appreciate about Kira Oldsbrook. She's relatively new to the whole Midweek Drive scenario, is halfway through her first term at the University of Lincoln studying communications and public relations, and already she's got the perfect description of Ilkeston. Got beer bottles on there. Ben, have you got anything you wish to add, or do you just want to remind Kira that you're looking forward to working with her for the Lincoln Academy of Learning and Teaching event?
I shan't. Not on air, Alex. Not on air.
Very dreading it.
Yeah, well, Kira, what have you been up to in your reading week?
reading, obviously, Ben.
Would you like me to be brutally honest, or would you like me to academic?
No, because not being funny, most people don't tend to do much academic stuff. So.
Oh, that's okay then. No, I haven't been. I've been preparing, just I'm so bad, my Halloween costume for today. Which makes me sound like a right nerd, but I had to go to three different fancy dress shops.
Three.
I mean, it doesn't sound that bad, does it? But I was after these contact lenses, like that are purpley reddy. They're really weird, and nowhere did them. And then I tried to put the contact lenses. Actually, I've got them kind of semi in at the minute, but when I originally put them in one of my eyes, it went upwards. So it was hard. I thought I lost it, but
what, the eye?
Fine.
Sure, the
eye. No, not my eye. I mean the contact lens, because it's like the really thin layer of glass, aren't they? So it literally rolled up. So I had to try and like roll my eye back down. If that makes any sense.
You know, Kira, sometimes you begin to worry me, and as your tutor, I just think, what's she doing now? I mean, goodness. You can see that, Chloe. There's a shot of Kira last week hiding behind an SFX magazine. Who knows what could happen with respect. I mean, what advice would you give Kira then in terms of dealing with contact lenses when they
sensible.
Well, you know, you've just got to try your best to put it on and keep trying until it goes on your eye. I've only actually had them in once, though. Mm. I've never used it before, and it made my eyes really sting, and I never did it ever again.
Yeah. I don't know if I put them in right.
I don't think you did if it ended up that high up your eye.
So, no, it's like, it's hard. You know how you have a normal eyeball?
Yeah.
And you've got your pupil and the colour that's in the middle.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of risen, like, upwards, as in before my eyelid. So you can just see half of, like, the eye. Then the other half of the colour is, like, actually in my eye socket, if that makes any sense. Like, it's gone beyond my eyelid.
So what kind of character are you trying to actually channel for this, Kira?
I don't even know. My original idea was to go as like this dark, gothic-y, fairy thingy with wings and all that kind of cool stuff. Right. And I got these lenses. My outfit was purple and I looked really cool. And then I thought, it'll go nice. And now one of my contact lenses are lost in my eyeball, so it's not going to work.
Well, with that little number, in which we'll find out whether Kira's eyeball is indeed sort of in one intact and in one piece. Yeah. What's the most interesting Halloween costume you've ever worn?
A devil.
Right. Yeah.
With
the tail or without the tail?
Oh, I've worn it with the tail before.
Not surprised.
The thing is, I don't think I'm very You know, I'm quite a creative person, but when it comes to fancy dress, I'm not very experimental, you know. I'm a bit sort of stick a pair of horns on and that's it, job done, like, you know.
You see, Kira, if you'd taken Chloe's advice...
Don't fluff them out of the consequences.
Exactly, the message would have been there. Ben,
no. No, just a mask. A ghost, but nothing really...
A sheet with two holes. That's all you need.
Not a lot was put into it,
white sheet,
if I'm honest.
Two holes, sorted.
Not
job
a lot of
done.
Effort was made.
A suit and tie, men in black. That's all you need. You know?
Exactly. See? Simplify it.
Yeah.
Or Halloween. Just go yourself. That's the alternative.
Still, it's one way of keeping the seven-year-old psychotics of Ilkeston out of the door. Basically, you sort of weigh it with
dress up as a chap and then you fit right in.
No,
no. Then again, you know, it wouldn't scare them because they're used to seeing that on a daily basis. So
yeah, well,
dress up normal then. Dress up like a normal human being. that would be fine then.
And obviously the views of some of our contributors when it comes to other parts of the country, much as our views on vegans, are not necessarily shared by the management of the hospital.
Oh, yeah.
Very important there. Kira, it's been awesome. I'm going to ask Chloe to put those last two questions to you. Take it away, please, Chloe.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link, Kira?
Yes, I have, thank you.
Lovely. I've definitely enjoyed your story about the contact lenses.
What not to love?
Would you like to come back and chat to us on the show?
Well, yes, as long as I can see. Because at the minute, I don't know if I've lost an eyeball.
Oops.
Right, well, be brave, that's all I have to say. And obviously, check out the ophthalmic people if needs be. Kira, we set a round of applause for Kira Osborne, bravely dealing with quite frankly, an eye-wateringly amusing tale.
Yeah, oh, I like that. When you're strange, faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are running when you're down, when you're strange. Faces come out of the rain when you're strange. No one remembers your name when you're strange. When you're strange.
So a wee while back in the joys of September, I did the usual location report from the Harrogate Autumn Flower Show and did a whole range of interviews, one of whom actually emerged as being just a little bit special. And indeed, we received an email from the aforementioned company with, "Very good to meet you at a cold but dry Harrogate show. If our little talk ever goes to air, I'd really appreciate it if you could let me know." Well, it went to air and it's still in air and it was so good we decided to actually invite you back. Neil Urry, Australian founder of VeggiePod. How are you, Neil?
I'm very well, thanks. How
seems
with you?
Oh, well, in Lincoln, what's not to appreciate when you've got a studio packed with Ben Lewis, third-year public relations guru extraordinaire, chairman of Signet PR, and the awesome Miss Lincolnshire, no less, Chloe Rose.
Good day to all.
Good day to you, mate.
Good day.
Looking for a good day there. That was coming. I was waiting for it.
Good to go.
It was on my bingo card.
So, Neil, would you like to tell us not about Vegemite, because obviously that's men at work, but VeggiePods?
Well, the VeggiePod is an Australian invention, as you've mentioned, and what we've tried to do is make growing vegetables and fruit and even flowers, you know, accessible for everyone in any type of garden, you know, both big or small, with soil or without soil and a bit of concrete. So, you know, it's been a long journey from Australia, obviously, to England.
I'm just well impressed with the husky-proof gardens that we can actually see there. Huskies desperately trying to actually get into those gardening things, trying to dig up those routines, but it's a husky-proof garden. I mean, that's what we need more of.
Yeah. Basically, you know, we started in the northern beaches of Sydney, you know, in a backyard, and since then, you know, we've gone from Australia through to Canada, and then, you know, earlier this year we was at the Chelsea Flower Show. So it's been a journey. It's been exciting, been a lot of hard work, but a lot of fun as well.
It's literally the only way to get succulent pods, which is a phrase I never thought I'd actually say at drive time, but never mind. It's coming up to 6 o'clock, and I've just said succulent pods for the second time. Succulent pods, number three. Chloe, horticulture. Do you have green fingers? Is it something you've considered investing in, or is it a case of no? That's what supermarkets are for.
Do you mean gardens and this sort of thing? I mean, Mum gets stuck into that kind of thing. I mean, I suppose I could well do, really.
Ben?
No.
Yeah, my parents are very much into it. We've got quite a lot going on in our garden, actually.
But would you consider enhancing that with the veggie pod?
Well, funny enough, they have something very similar to that in their garden, which is kind of... it was mainly for tomatoes and things like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a very similar format with the bed you've got there. But they have, like, a plastic container that goes over the top with vents on the side. I don't know what the technical term for that is. I'm sure you'd be able to help me with that. But it looks very similar. Whether it's husky-proof, though, it remains to be seen.
That's the acid test. I mean, if it can't cope with those Instagram ace huskies, then, frankly, it's just not worthwhile. Is it a quiet time of the year for you now, Neil, or is it a case of, no, the Christmas markets are coming around?
Yeah, interestingly, you know, one thing that we don't experience in Australia is the Christmas market approach because, you know, obviously we're coming into summer, so people are looking to start their gardens in Australia. So definitely it's new for us to attend Christmas fairs. And believe it or not, we're driving down to Cornwall just in a couple of weeks to attend a fair down there for 2 days. So we're trialling, you know, it everywhere. We're just trying to spread the word. And we're planning for next year.
Well, I mean, we're even looking at the video now, which was why we had a momentary pause thing showing the ways in which you can set it up. Three basic sizes. I suppose, actually, this is something which is appropriate for any size, really. And we wouldn't say it's indoors. It obviously needs to be outdoors. But, again, a way of actually growing vegetables for our own consumption, which, as many people would say, can only be a good thing.
Look, totally. And you mentioned indoors, and believe it or not, you could have it indoors because it's self-contained, so you've got the reservoir underneath. So if you have, you know, you have a patio or you have bifold doors and you could bring it inside and you're still getting good sunlight through the window, then you can still grow. So totally, that's possible too.
And what sort
even in the colder months.
What sort of things can you grow with respect? I mean, is it a case of, well, it's self-explanatory, it's vegetables in pods?
Yeah, well, you can grow everything from a carrot through to your, you know, your salad crops. You know, you've got a full foot of depth. So, you know, except for a couple of your potato varieties, you can grow pretty much everything. We have a good approach to tomatoes too. Tomatoes are a vine, they like to grow tall. So a lot of people say, well, you can't grow them in a veggie pod because you've got your canopy. So what we do and what we've trialled is having a trellis. So you get the tomato plants to grow from corner to corner, but they grow along a trellis because they're a vine. And, you know, and people can have fun. And that's what we're trying to do is, if you can educate children from a younger age, you know, and they enjoy getting out into the garden, growing their own vegetables, then it's only a good thing.
The planet would be a better place indeed. Ben?
Yeah, Neil, regarding children, I was going to ask you about that as well. Do you often find, I know we're trying to educate a younger audience, more so in the way that their food's being put on their plate.
Milk obviously comes also from supermarkets, obviously.
Yeah, well, this is the thing, you know, and growing it themselves. But do you often find that you're educating a younger audience more so now than ever used to? Or have you noticed, or has it all kind of always been like that?
Good question. And what we did is, you know, first of all, you need to educate, you know, parents to start to educate children or go through the education system. So what we've done in Australia is we formed a collaboration between the Australian government and the Southern Cross University in Melbourne. And the key aim there was to develop a program that was simple for teachers to use with the pupils. So we devised a couple of programs, one called the Kindergarten and one called Sprouters. Basically, in the UK terms, junior and senior schools. And it's basically a program that we give to a teacher or help, etc. And it takes the child through the assembly of the pod, to the planting of the pod, to the harvesting of the pod. You know, it's a long journey, and we gave them growing guides for some key veg, you know, things that grew quite well, so children can really get involved from the beginning. And we're seeing some really good results. So now we're adopting that for the UK climate. Obviously, the seasons are different. Some of the crops are different. So we're working with a couple of ambassadors locally. One that we've just started working with called Chris Collins, the old Blue Peter gardener. He's just got on board and he's going to be supporting us in this journey.
It's just a win-win situation, and we have to guarantee for anybody who's concerned about pods, it's not pod people, it's not Invasion of the Body Snatchers. It is actually sort of pods, as in veggie pods. Chloe, any closing thoughts from yourself?
I think my family would be very interested in this, actually, my mum and dad. I think they would be interested in purchasing that for the garden.
Well, I think, you know, clearly we can actually sort out deals and various other bits and pieces now. It's always open to offer from this.
It's the BBC.
Exactly. It works in so many delightful ways. Web address, Neil, where's the best place to actually go to find out more details about VeggiePod? If Chloe's mum and dad are interested, if Ben's mum and dad are interested, if the listener is interested in following
maybe
up.
Maybe everyone is.
What's not to love about VeggiePod? Surely. There.
Well, you've sold it. Very simply, www.veggiepod, V-E-G-E, believe it or not, pod.co.uk.
So, that leaves us with two final questions. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, Neil Urry?
I've had a great time. This has been a lot of fun.
Well, actually, do you do Halloween in Australia? Is it a case of no, we're coming into the
summer?
Well,
interestingly, we were just having a bit of a joke about that because Halloween is huge here, and it's not big in Australia, but it's starting to take off. And I'm talking to some people today. The UK 10 years ago, no one really believed in Halloween, and it wasn't big. So no doubt it would hit the shores of Australia.
Like James Cook, really. James Cook, 250 years ago, when Endeavour sort of went sail and he nearly ran his ship aground and claimed Australia as a continent, much to the concern of the native Australians who were living there at the time. It's all right. They won't mind, really. After all, it's for King George III. Anyway, let's not go into historical controversies. I think Chloe will ask the second question. Off you go, please.
And would you like to come back and talk to us about the veggie pods again?
I would love to. I'd love to. It's been great fun.
Lovely.
I think a round of applause for Neil Urry, please. Absolutely spot on. And Neil will return. Well, I suppose with Halloween and other aspects, people get frightened and scared of a whole range of things. But what about losing personal effects and mislaying things and actually having to return home to recover forgotten items and so on? Coping with losing things can be one of life's biggest frustrations. So to discuss this and more, we're delighted to welcome two fine souls. First of all, neuroscientist extraordinaire, the amazingly talented Dr. Jack Lewis. How are you, Jack?
Very well, thank you.
And the equally talented in all sorts of other wonderful ways from Tile, the sales director of Tile, who commissioned the research. That'd be Peter Groom. How are you, Peter?
Hey there. Yeah, very good, thanks.
Wonderful. Jack, let's turn to you first. In terms of mislaying phones, keys, wallets and so on, is there a danger of becoming OCD about this and actually worrying and fretting needlessly? Or is it just a case of this is life, it's what happens to you, got to deal with it?
Well, the thing is, these days we're all a little bit overloaded. Information overload is quite a thing these days. We've never had so much to juggle in terms of, you know, it's not just getting your to-do list done and making sure you're taking your pets for a walk and making sure that you stay on top of all of, you know, make sure you've got all of your valuables before you leave the house. There's so many different layers of kind of perhaps stressful, anxiety-inducing requirements in our given day that we're ever so slightly overloaded. Our brains have the capacity to hold about 7 items in mind simultaneously, give or take a couple of items, and more often than not we're having to juggle much more information than that.
28 times a day is the sort of line in which we typically check our pockets or bags and so on from that point of view. That's quite a large number, Peter. I mean, were you mind when you came across this particular research? Were you surprised? Did you think, well, yeah, that's what it's all about? We need to actually sort of think through and make lists.
Well, I guess it was a surprise to a certain element, but then if I think of my pattern a day and the fear factor of, leaving something behind, I guess it's, perhaps not such a big surprise. And that's the average. And if you take millennials of today, that's something like 69 times a day where they're patting, looking, that fear of losing something. It is quite a lot. And it just goes to show you just how important some of these things have become to our life, mostly, obviously, smartphone, where it's kind of your remote control to life. On average, even to the extent that you're going back home to forget find something that you've forgotten, that's how on average about 7 times a month, something like that. So there's lots of things in there that helps me understand the reason why a lot of people have embraced our technology, because we do make things a lot easier for people to either just find things or being a little bit smarter even, and maybe sort of tagging some of those most, I guess, precious items that you do not want to be leaving behind somewhere, and actually getting alert before you've moved too far away from home so that you don't forget them in the first place. And if that helps reduce some of that anxiety and makes it an easier transition through your day and not patting so much, then that's a great thing.
In terms of the world of academia, Jack, the notion of the absent-minded professor or the person who's sort of so obsessed with their work and focused that they obviously will miss out on various other bits of it. That was almost a kind of cliche of the 20th century. Is this something which is impacting on all of us these days?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair to say. Like, usually the cliche of the sort of woolly-headed professor is that their mind is so immersed in the depths and complexities of the science that they're...
It's hosting secrets of the brain, obviously. You can't deal with all the mundanities and so on.
I tell you what, being a TV presenter is easy peasy compared to what most professors have to handle. Because it's not, you know, you can spend all day reading papers and there's just more to read. It's that sense of being overwhelmed by the sheer sort of depth and breadth of the information you've got to keep track of. And with sort of social media, various social media platforms available on our smartphones, and we tend to sort of, you know, fill every spare moment of our day supplementing the amount of information we get from face-to-face interaction. And then the stuff we read in the newspaper and the stuff we listen to on the radio. And then we're also kind of scanning multiple social media streams for further information. And quite frankly, it all becomes a bit too much. So yes, I think we're all in the same sort of brain state, or many of us are in the same kind of brain state as a slightly information overwhelmed professor.
It's intriguing to find from a gender point of view that 17% of men say that realising they've forgotten an essential item is like seeing their football team concede a goal in the last minute. No! Whereas women, of course, say it's similar to missing their bus or train, so not so much the sporting aspect from that point of view. At least 20% of women do.
Yeah, well, that doesn't probably come as a surprise. I'm used to that pain being a Reading fan myself, but It's interesting, you know, how we all react, I think, to that fear of have you lost stuff. And to be honest, most of us, as we know, we probably haven't actually lost it. It's on us somewhere or it's on our person, and it's just about finding it.
Are you saying, Peter, that there isn't such thing as a mischievous sprite from another dimension who actually sort of steps up and down and actually take things momentarily to go with single socks and various other bits and pieces?
I think it is. I seem to remember there's a film with Emily Blunt in where everything seems to sort of go on a... everything goes on a pause while things are moved away from you, and that
exactly.
perhaps explains why you've lost them.
It's clearly the Adjustment Bureau for the 21st century. It's all there.
I was racking my brain, but you've picked it out for me. Thank you.
Well, if we can't use a bit of Philip K. Dick to actually help this interview, what can we use? Jack, let's turn to your good self, away from the world of science fiction, away from the world of fantasy and so on. What are the best ways forward? Is it a case of just keep breathing and make sure that things will pan out okay? What's the best solution?
Well, it's funny you should say that, because it's not just about keep breathing. That's a good tip to just staying alive in general, but it's how you breathe. If you breathe in, so there's this thing called 7-11 breathing, and it's akin to mindfulness, and you breathe in for 7 seconds and you breathe out for 11 seconds. So to keep panic mode at bay, and a quarter of Brits say they go into panic mode when they think they've lost something, by breathing in for 7 seconds, breathing out for 11, the most important thing is that you're exhaling lots of carbon dioxide, which is a waste material of metabolism, as I'm sure all your listeners know. What they might not know is that when you have an excess of carbon dioxide in your blood, it dissolves into the blood, and it is carbonic acid. So it means too much carbon dioxide means your blood is ever so slightly too acidic. Now, that doesn't cause too much trouble, but in the brain, it can be problematic because the acidity, the pH of blood, is very, very important for keeping proteins exactly the right shape. And if proteins aren't exactly the right shape, particularly the ones in your neurons and your synapses, then it just means all of your 86 billion neurons aren't working as efficiently as they could do. So, breathe in for 7. Out for 11, get rid of that excess carbon dioxide, get your brain working efficiently so you can find those things. You can think straight and get to the bottom of where those lost keys or lost mobile phones have got to.
And that, Jack, is why you were an awesome neuroscientist and connecting so many wonderful
ways. I'm blushing.
Peter, if people are keen to find out further information about this research or other things we've spoken about today, where's the best website to go to?
That's www.thetileapp.com.
Peter Groom, EMEA Sales Director of Tile, and Dr. Jack Lewis, neuroscientist extraordinaire. Many thanks indeed, gentlemen, and hopefully we'll speak again in the near future.
I hope so. Cheers.
Thank you. Cheers. See you.
And there'll be a special prize if you can identify which motion picture this comes from, courtesy of the City of Prague Philharmonic. Ben, the challenge is there. children can be the scariest monsters of them all, particularly on Halloween.
Thunderbirds, James Bond, Stanley Kubrick, Meryl Streep, Joan 90, Doctor Who, Batman Begins, Superman, The Three Martinis, The Three Deuces, and Dick's Banner. Who needs anything more to welcome the legendary Shane and Sheila River to the Midweek Drive?
Hurrah and hurrah and hurrah. The world can once again rest easy and breathe because Shane and Sheila are back with us. Good evening, Shane and Sheila.
Hello, Alex.
Office. Just Shane? No, Sheila? Never mind. We can.
No, I'm afraid she's not. She's listing a bit. In her throat, a lot of it.
That's okay.
I mean, I've been married to her for 50 years and I can't understand a thing she's doing.
Exactly. These are the challenges that occur when you've got that's Canadian.
Brilliant. Well, it's
bit that. Of a holiday, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, the voice you just heard there in the background with a very noticeable laugh, that was Ben Lewis, who was very excited when I said you're on the show today.
Oh, I've missed you, Shane. It's been a while. Exactly. It's been a very long time.
In fact, the last time we spoke together, Shane, Ben was just about to head off to Bentley in Crewe, and he's come back without a Bentley car for you. I did actually say that it was a mandatory routine that he should have actually come back with a Bentley car for you, but no.
I couldn't even manage a toy car. That was the worst bit.
Oh. How do you fit into that?
It's tough. It's a very
Listen, yeah. Jerry Anderson, lots of toy cars there. I mean, surely it's easy sorted through. I mean,
well, Lady Penelope had a Rolls Royce.
Exactly.
So she can't help, unfortunately.
She fitted into the whole thing perfectly.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, go ahead.
Halloween. I mean, it's something which kind of we exported to America through the Celtic backgrounds of obviously the Scots and the Irish and the lines of the Feast of Samhain and going guising and so on. And yet it seems to have become really popular in this country. I mean, did the Rimmer household or did you used to engage in trick or treat over this particular period of All Hallows Eve?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Absolutely. I mean, the whole town lit up. We had all sorts of. Actually, we had a few fires we could have done without. But I mean, aside from that, it was a very joyful kind of situation, and people poured out of their houses, everybody, and it was a grand sort of getting together, lovely stuff.
I mean, I didn't think such things actually happened in Potter's Bar, but never mind. Perhaps in Canada.
I didn't think such things happened in Toronto either.
It's a strange and peculiar world. Chloe, you were posing with Shane's book earlier, and it's there. Ben's looking at it enviously because he's already started reading it. He's very keen. From Thunderbirds to Pterodactyls. Shane, did you realise that these books are selling for over £130 now on Amazon?
You're joking.
I kid thee not. You actually go to Amazon and actually seek it. In fact, Ben can actually do it now. Would you actually
He's going to check this out.
Onto the website. He'll see the kind of... We either need a second printing or you need to stock in for all sorts of things. These are collector's items, come extraordinary sort of levels on that sort of basis. I mean,
£130!
Yeah, that's £60 more than you pay for William Shatner's autograph. I'm just setting. You know, another Canadian. One was Captain Cook. Another was extraordinary for that. But whilst Ben's checking out the details on this one, Chloe, do you remember the series Thunderbirds?
I do.
Voice of Scott Tracy.
No way. Oh, my gosh, yes.
Exactly. Have to mention it, hence from Thunderbirds to Pterodactyls. That's the line. I mean, Ben's already started reading about Stanley Kubrick and the onset of...
Yeah, I didn't get as far as I wanted to, unfortunately, so I'm going to have to purchase this book off Alex again after.
Because he can't afford £130, basically. I mean, I'd say buy your own.
Exactly.
It's just ridiculous. Have we got a figure as yet?
Well, in fact, I found Shane's... It's on Prime there for £10, Alex.
Oh, no. I
couldn't find the £130. Well, maybe you sure it was Amazon? It could have been something else. Perhaps.
I'll have a look. Take away the interview, please, because we could be interrupted at any time by Phil Leonis from Los Angeles. He could just drop in like a director would and say, "I'm signing you up now, Shane."
No, right. Shane, it's a wonderful book you've got here, and I really can't wait to read the rest of it. But I mean, I just wanted to, obviously, I know you mentioned a lot of your highlights, and it's probably been quite hard for you to kind of squeeze it all into one book.
I'd never really written anything in detail like this before, but the lovely part of the writing it was, you'd write down one sort of memory you had, and something you'd completely forgotten about pops up. And so that's the way the book went. I mean, I started off with the heart hammering like crazy, wondering if I was going to be able to complete it. But it went so easily. It was terrific.
And that's was that kind of the best bit about it, would you say, writing the book? Because the fact that memories would come back that you wouldn't say you forgot, but you wouldn't necessarily be thinking of straight away.
No, that's absolutely right. I was a whole new man, but I realized that I was a very lucky fella. I mean, I got around the world, met people I never would have, it was a great experience because you were actually doing something instead of lolling around on a beach, you know, in a beach cruiser somewhere. And you were part of what was going on. It was a lovely time.
A highly entertaining, fast-paced autobiography of a man who is clearly one of the UK's prized assets. Absolutely. Oh. Couldn't put it better myself. I found out the challenge. It's currently unavailable. You were looking at the audiobook, which seemed more exciting from that point of view, Ben.
It is.
Whereas actually the actual hard copy book, of which you have the privilege of actually holding it in your hands.
With the signed copy.
Exactly.
Fact, no.
Which is currently unavailable, which is the key thing. So who knows what can happen. And obviously it's there. Chloe, have you got any questions you'd like to put to Shane?
I'm thinking about it.
Hang on. Shane, very quickly. We spoke to Annette Andre a few weeks ago, who you may or may not know. Originally used to work with Roger Moore, Sir Roger Moore.
Yeah.
On The Saint, The Persuaders, and various other things.
Yeah.
I know, you did quite a lot of work with him. What were your kind of fondest memories? Because we heard a lot of great things from Annette with her time with Roger. Or Sir Roger, what were kind of your sort of most memorable moments with him?
I was in awe of the man, really. First of all, I mean, after Connery, who was the other Bond I made pictures with, he was a joker, and you could never turn your back on him in case he was coming up behind you and about to do something. It was his way of making the time go a lot quicker. And so everybody was very wary of Roger, but he had a lovely sense of humor, and he enjoyed what he was doing. A lot of people get into that situation where they are stars. It's a sort of a commitment that they do slightly grudgingly. I mean, they take the money, but... It is something they don't have the heart to open up, and with Roger, who was quite different, he was a good speaker. He could warm a room up, you know, in a minute, and this is what he did most of the time after before he went, and he brought a lot of people a lot of joy, a lot of happiness. He's a good actor too.
Much like yourself, Shane, in many ways. And thankfully, you're with us for at least another 40 years, which is important. Let's move on. Chloe, you've been rifling through the book now.
Yes.
Great excitement.
Absolutely astonishing. I mean, what a career. Like, I'm just, you know, because I've not read the book before. I know Ben's looked at it. You've read it as well. But this is fantastic. I'm looking at all the pictures. And I just wondered what you would say to aspiring actors and actresses, sort of what the best way to go about it is, or just to keep going, or any sort of advice, or I just wondered.
Yeah. I think one should see good actors at work. If you have to go to the theater, do so. If you have to spend a lot of time in front of the television set, do so, because the good ones are there for a reason, because they made it work. And I think that sort of help you get, you know, from people who are actually on the job and working is very valuable. You can read all sorts of books and manuals and God knows what, but to actually see and hear an actor who knows what he's doing at work is of inestimable value. It's what makes the world go around. And England is full of good actors. So, you know, there's no difficulty in finding people you can follow right down the trail with.
Allowing for being full of good actors, you might say that Los Angeles is occasionally full of reasonable directors, particularly if they directed The Lady Killers, which is out there.
That's a great one. I love that play.
Do you know, I think it is. It's not the play, though. It's a movie, The Lady Killers.
Oh, I've seen the actual theatre play.
Nothing to do with this one.
This is totally separate.
I know. Once again, Shane, Miss Lincolnshire, Chloe Rose, has taken us on a totally different angle from that point of view.
It sounds like you've got a platoon in the studio.
We're only adding more.
Exactly. Phil Learners, have you cleared your throat? Are you set and ready to identify what the piece of music that I was playing with the crazy children's laugh was all about, or did you not catch that part of the program?
There are so many questions in there, I don't know which one I'm supposed to answer. If you played music now, I would gladly guess what it is.
Don't worry about it. It's all right, it's Poltergeist, but never mind, that's a different line entirely. Let's move on.
Was it Poltergeist?
Oh, unbelievable.
You know, one.
Straight in there.
Was it Suspiria?
No.
Was it... I don't know. Okay, all right.
Welcome back. Now, Shane, the one thing I would say, can I introduce you to Phil Learners? Phil Learners is currently in Los Angeles. You're in Potter's Bar. I feel the two parts were destined to meet via Canada. Because curiously, every week, Shane, Phil Learners, director extraordinaire, also works with Canadian actor. I know it's difficult to believe, but Chilpack Hollywood with Dean Haglund, Canadian with an American, it's rolled out on a weekly basis.
You know, Alex, when I was in Lincoln, in that very studio...
Mm-hmm. You mean the studio that Shane Rimmer and Chloe Rose have actually also sat in the studio?
But I got to interview Shane on one of those shows.
This is true. I'm glad you remembered. That's very important.
It was a big deal. Shane Rimmer is a big deal. He is one of those actors that you can learn a lot from watching his process.
That's very nice, thank you.
I trust, Shane, you'll play that back for Sheila if ever she gives you any grief about the acting process.
Yeah,
listen, dear, you can learn a lot from me. Anyway, Phil, where do you want to take us? What would you like to talk about before we get into The Lady Killers?
Where would I like to take you? Mm. Hey, happy Halloween, everybody.
Yes.
In Los Angeles, of course, the time now is...
Well, 1 week before the end of the world as we know it, or our midterm elections. It's 11:35 in the a.m.
Now, previous years, you've been able to listen to the whole show because you finished with the Los Angeles Breakfast Club by then. I suspect probably you've been so busy packaging up The Lady Killers, which now actually has fantastic distribution across the country. That's the United States of America.
Very nice.
It is. It's good.
Yes, I have been busy with that. I was actually busy doing a corporate job for one of the companies that is actually platforming the film itself, but in an unrelated matter. But yes, my movie, The Lady Killers, as you know, Alex, you did a special show on it. And when we made this film, this really dark comedy about... toxic masculinity, about men behaving like boys. I thought, who does not want to see a dark comedy about how misogyny and exploitation of women leads to violence? Who does not want to see a dark comedy about that? And the answer I got was everybody. Everybody does not want to see that movie. And we were actually told by many people that kind of misogyny, exploitation of women, these issues no longer exist. And then we had a presidential election. And after our presidential election, suddenly people started saying, oh, could we watch that movie now? Could we see that movie? And it's stunning because not a week goes by, and certainly in the wake of Me Too and Time's Up, but even most recently, we had a Supreme Court confirmation, a series of hearings in this country. And it was fascinating because I felt like I was watching one of the characters in my movie when the stories about his behavior in his past were coming out. So we have a movie that apparently, as one critic said, could not be more timely. It's exactly the kind of film we need right now. So it's exciting to be able to finally bring this to people. And it's available across a variety of on-demand platforms throughout North America. It comes out on disc this week. There will be theatrical screenings throughout the fall and winter. And starting this week at the American Film Market in Santa Monica, which is one of the three big film markets each year, along with Cannes and Berlin. We'll be starting to have meetings with international distributors so that the film can become available worldwide, hopefully, you know, early next year.
Boy, it's on its way then. That sounds great. And I think it's good to see a well-produced vehicle explain itself in the sort of terms that it's not over presuming. Or but it tells the truth, and if as long as that sort of thing can be presented, and people get to see it, it can do nothing but good.
Well, it is interesting because that's the piece that even when people would tell me, oh, this is too exaggerated, this is too extreme, this doesn't exist anymore. I couldn't shake the feeling that, no, I know this is true. I know that this is true. And I can't necessarily prove it, and I can't explain how I know, but just from, you know, my sense of the culture and also my understanding of psychology and my training is in violence prevention and what I see in storytelling, how much exploitation and misogyny I see on screen. I knew this was true. And as Alex knows, having known me for a long time, when something makes me angry, I like to see if I can find a way to turn it into comedy. And maybe it's the comedy like it is in this film that sticks in the back of the throat after you're laughing. But I like if I can do it in a humorous way, because at the very least, I will be an easier person to be around, but also hopefully I'll be a more interesting storyteller. And very few dark comedies really hit the mark because that tone is so fragile. If you go too far in one direction, and you never get that tone back. But when a dark comedy really lands, and of course, Mr. Kubrick was a master of them.
He certainly was. And you felt that all the time he was on the floor, then you were on the floor there too. The man had an incredible brain. He was the sort of father confessor of that film. I mean, he had enough to do directing it, but people with problems, and they were told this by him, if you've got something that's not working and you want to get talk about it, do it. And people were lined up, honestly. It was, he was an amazing sort of man. He had an insight that was so helpful to an awful lot of people.
I mean, you know, you think about, obviously, Dr. Strangelove is a dark comedy. I think Clockwork Orange is a dark comedy. Yeah. And these are ones that when you land that punch, they may have a questionable reception at the moment they come out, because obviously they're challenging certain perceptions that people have just accepted. But they stand the test of time. They last forever when you pull them off. And what's interesting is I actually think that's one of the reasons why The Shining, which was sort of rejected when it came out as maybe an okay horror film, is a landmark masterpiece now, because people can now appreciate all the dark comedy in it. And once you realize that element of it, oh my goodness, now the movie's even scarier than it ever was.
Yeah. Well, it's about time that something based on reality came out and was a success, because there's quite a lot of, even though we're all involved in this sort of media business, there's an awful lot of waste of time and talent and writing that goes on just to make up your weekly salary. And to get people to see exactly what's going on without the rambunctious speaker who is at the heart of it all is very important.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm at the age certainly now where I don't want to feel that anything I'm doing is cannon fodder. You know, I really ask, okay, just because I can make this, just because I can get this made, just because somebody can sell this, does it mean that I should make it? It's interesting. The longer I live, the more I get back in touch with that original creative spirit of a little boy who started telling stories because he wanted to connect with other people. And so, I want to engage in conversation, and these stories are my conversation starter.
Phil Leonis has always been a storyteller. At the age of 6, he was writing short stories. By the age of 9, he was acting in plays and musicals. By the time he graduated from high school, he was already a published film critic, a stand-up comic, and a television host in his native San Francisco Bay Area. After moving to Los Angeles, Leonis continued to perform stand-up comedy at such venues as the Comedy Store on Hollywood's Sunset Strip. While attending the UCLA Film School, Leonis co-produced, along with Channing Duguay, wrote, directed, and starred in an award-winning thesis film. And so it goes. I could share more.
Let me make one correction. What you just recorded, I certainly anticipate being played at my memorial. it's already done. Yeah. We just got to blow up some big photos of me, and it's all taken care of, Alex. Thank you. And you will MC. You will do eulogy.
I figured, Phil, as you actually had your engagement party with a zombie theme, it was the least I could do from this side of the pond.
But Alex, Channing Dungey is the woman's name, and she's currently, where is she now, you ask, after getting such an august start as co-producing a thesis film with me? Well, she's the head of ABC Television Network now.
Just shows the Leonis effect.
Not a bad way to spend your time, is it?
And that, Chloe, is what you call just sitting in, eavesdropping on a masterclass between actor and director.
I'm just taking it all in. Just listening. Good.
So, Ben, Firestorm, did you enjoy the trailer?
Oh, it was very good, thank you. I know it's had very good reception.
Very good,
with one
important omission, really. Sadly, Jamie Anderson didn't book Shane Rimmer to be one of the voices of the Firestorm people.
Unfortunately not. But now we'll have to find out.
I got my limitation, man.
Too good for them, Shane. That's what it is. Too good for them.
I was shocked, you know. And Jamie, I've actually put off until December at least before he comes back on Midweek Drive.
Exactly.
So, sorry.
An insult. An insult.
It's outrageous. It's casting settings. Chloe, any questions for either Shane or indeed Phil Leonis?
I just wonder, what was it like when you sort of got to where you wanted to be? You know, would you say that you've achieved all? It sounds like you've achieved everything that you wanted to achieve.
Sounds
both
it's
of
one
you,
for both of them.
What is it like? You know, how did it feel when you'd achieved? I don't know how to. It's just
what's
amazing.
It like when you've achieved?
I mean,
Chloe's achieved being Miss Lincolnshire and almost was Miss UK, so she's well on the way. She's also a keen singer-songwriter as well. But what's it like for yourself, who's never been Miss Lincolnshire, when you've achieved?
Well, if what happens is good, and it happened because you dug in and did some hard work, that's a good feeling. Because, as I mentioned before, this sort of business can be very frivolous at times. And, you know, at the end of the picture, you say, what the hell was I watching that business for? It's crazy. So if it's due to some direct and reasonable action on your part, then it's a good feeling.
Mm. And Phil.
Wow. You know, this is interesting. In the meeting that I was having, which was the unfortunate reason that I couldn't listen to the show earlier, and they were asking me, apropos of this assignment, if I had any bits of my work, any suggestions, any pieces that were my particular favorites, I suddenly found myself telling them an astonishing truth, which is my favorite is always the thing I'm going to do next. That's my favorite. Because it's just about gravitating towards things that are going to show me what I'm made of. Who am I now? What am I made of now? I am made of more than just the sum of my past experiences. There's new parts of myself to explore. And so as a result, I've always found that I seemingly don't repeat myself, which keeps things fresh. But then when I do take the time to look back, I'll say, oh boy, there are really some strong themes that weave through this. And so now I can look back at my own work and see that they're almost chapters of a book that is revealing myself to me. So yeah, that's what's fun about it. That's the ongoing thing. But in terms of having made it, I don't know if I'm equipped to judge what that means, except to say that the closest I have ever felt to making it was when I got to toast my fiance at our engagement party the other night.
Oh, that's lovely.
It's just a movie waiting to be written, yeah, really. And I can see Shane doing the kind of voiceover in terms of looking back from the life of Linus. You know, just as you did for Gandhi, actually, Shane. I mean, I think it was the same thing. I mean, without you being Edward R. Murrow at the start of Gandhi, Richard Attenborough would not have had an Academy Award-winning film on his hands. And the Oscar for best set design would probably have gone to Sid Mead from Blade Runner. But there we are. That's 1982.
That's no small thing, playing Edward R. Murrow. I must say, I mean, because he is... When I was in high school, I kept a black and white photo of Edward R. Murrow. I'm a kid growing up in the San Francisco Bay Area in the 1980s, and I keep by my desk where I do all my homework a black and white photo of Edward R. Murrow reporting during the Blitz. And I mean, the word hero gets thrown around a lot, but I would put him on a short list that I could count on one hand of genuine 20th century heroes to me.
Yeah.
So
he was an immense man. He spoke the truth. That was what was undeniable about him and what people loved about him. And sometimes he put himself into hot water by expressing the truth because it didn't agree with everybody. But you could always be sure that when he spoke about something, especially something that was very, very important to everybody who was listening, that what you were getting was a helpful and a completely spontaneous bit of truth. And that's what we all need. So we've got to stop pretending and playing, you know, with a lousy deck of cards. So.
Well, I also think you have to be someone who is completely authentic.
And that is
And Edward R. Murrow was authentic, and he spoke the truth. And that combination is very rare.
And put quite simply, that is why Shane Rimmer has been the best Canadian-British president the Americans will never actually have. It's tragic. You know, I mean, you should be in there now, Shane, sort of sorting the things through. But no, never mind. Let's see where we actually go.
Well, that was a great closing line, so I think I better duck out now.
Well, this is I think that's a nice one. But Chloe will ask you those last two questions. Go, please, Chloe.
Have you both enjoyed your telephonic link?
Immensely. Immensely.
Fantastic.
It's lovely to get a bunch together and everybody is loving what they're doing and loving the experiences that you've got from it.
Positive.
That's good stuff.
I've enjoyed it. It's very inspirational just for me to listen to you both talk about, you know.
Well Phil can stay with us for a few more minutes.
Yes.
Last question for...
But would you like to come back and chat to us again?
Oh, yes.
Can we expect you to come to Lincoln soon?
That's the real question.
I know you're desperate to meet him in person.
Shane, you need to come to Lincoln.
We'll get you sorted through. Don't worry, round of applause for Shane Rimmer, please.
Yay.
Stay with us, Phil. We'll be with you after.
And you.
We've taken this.
Thanks for the company.
Soho in the rain. He was looking for the place called fish and beef chow mein.
Don't worry, we'll play this in full tomorrow morning. I promise you it'll be All Souls Day. Actually, it's All Souls Day today. It's All Saints Day. No, it's All Souls Day and All Saints Day. It's very confusing. Anyway, moving on. Phil, are you in Halloween mode for this evening, or is it a case of it's Los Angeles, it's always Halloween mode?
I was in some Halloween mode at our engagement party and then at the Breakfast Club this morning. But... other than maybe watching a little bit of a spooky film, I think I've had my fill at this point. But I am actually going to go put on Werewolves of London as soon as the show is over, because I realized, wow, that's such a good song. I need to hear that again.
It is indeed.
I'm gonna put them in. But everyone should, if they really want to get spooked, if they, and they're listening to me in North America, they should go to theladykillersmovie.com, theladykillersmovie.com, because there is a portal to finding all the different on-demand platforms where they can watch the film. And if they're outside North America, visit that website. Keep visiting that website, because not only can you learn about the movie, but we will continue to post as the movie becomes available around the world.
Have you signed up for that, Ben Lewis?
I have not as of yet.
So, you don't have to sign up for anything. There's no signing up. We're not taking information from anyone, Alex.
No data breaches.
Well, you know, but in the world of spookiness and strange scenarios, do you know what movies Richard Fitzwilliams is going to be reviewing for us tomorrow morning when he's back live with the production after his exciting looks at wedding dresses and such like?
If it's a scary movie, I'm betting it must be Bohemian Rhapsody, the biopic of Queen.
It is actually Bohemian Rhapsody and The You I Hate. The Hate You Give, which I believe actually has a screenplay done by one of the fine souls you've also worked with, who sadly passed on and is now in a different line entirely beyond the pale. From what you said on Chilpack Hollywood, I believe. I'm referring to The Hate You Give. Is that correct, Phil?
Oh, the writer of it.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. There was a little bit of an interruption there. Yes. Oh, the wonderful Audrey Wells. Mm. A terrific writer and director, and just a beautiful, beautiful woman. Yeah, I got to know her almost 20 years ago when I did the behind-the-scenes documentary about a wonderful movie she did called Guinevere. But she was a very successful filmmaker, very successful writer, and maybe her... I haven't seen it yet, but maybe her greatest screenplay ever for a movie that came out just, I think, 2 days after she died.
Indeed, which is why we'll be hearing what Richard Fitzwilliams has to say about The Hate U Give. Chloe, have you enjoyed your experience being back in the studios for the Midweek Drive?
It's been absolutely fantastic. I've loved it. Really have. And I always think it's a fabulous opportunity to get to know new people, especially Phil Learners, which I have met him before. Well, not met him, but spoke to him before, which was amazing. But then Shane as well.
It's fair to say these stars,
you know.
It was on your first programme that you were so inspired by Phil Learners, and indeed you came up with this.
Happy trails.
And, you know.
So good.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
it's very corny, isn't it? Cringe.
Yeah, no. We wrapped up with various sort of things over there. Happy Halloween, etc. But really,
happy trails.
That's all you need.
Right.
It's a bit seductive, isn't it? Crikey.
No, it's a bit.
My goodness.
Shouldn't be played till after 9 o'clock. Needs to be off to Watershed.
Well, it's
exactly. Good. Thank goodness it's only noon here. I mean, if it was nighttime here, none of us are getting to sleep.
Okay, Chloe, last two questions for Phil Leonis. Let's go.
Have you enjoyed the telephonic link, Phil?
It has been it's been a spooktacular.
Ooh, very good. And would you like to join us again on the show?
I will return a week hence.
There you are. Mm. Well, we'll also be joined by another fine musician and indeed historian of the Californian beach culture and Beach Boys and more. That's Randy Naught is with us.
Beach Boys. Mm. I like the Beach Boys. Yes. My dad likes
so
the Beach
this
Boys.
This is a surfer.
I feel like this came through R.W. Sanders.
You're
That's
absolutely
what I feel
right.
Like.
It yeah. is an R.W. Yeah. Sanders connection from that point of view. So I'll be talking about that and more. So that's sorted out. Ben, have you enjoyed the programme?
It's been lovely, thank you.
That's splendid. Up after the news, it's a Siren Cinema Halloween Spooktacular Show, number 11 with Patrick Adams. It's going to be fun. Not a bit scary, but never mind. That'll come through. We'll be back in the morning for the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, probably without Phil. I mean, I don't, you know, because it'd be midnight. I mean, it'd be what? No, it'd be even later because the hours haven't gone back. Is it true, Phil, by
That's
the way, before,
true.
Before we leave, is it a case of you're voting to see whether or not next year you won't actually move the clocks forward or back? You'll just stay at the same time?
No, we have, in California, we have a proposition system where the populace of the state is allowed to vote on different ballot measures. It's very complicated, but one of the ballots this year is about daylight savings versus daylight standard and whether we will stay on standard or savings year round. But the issue with this one and why our ballot system is often so ludicrous, it's federal law. It doesn't matter what we vote on here in California. Even if we do it, the federal government could take it under advisement and maybe Congress, but it would take an act of Congress, could let California decide for itself, but nothing we say matters.
Pow, what a way to actually wrap up the program, which started off with George Jurjian, author and life coach on the ungratefulness of UK folk. Yes, we're so ungrateful in Britain. I put that right, I think. Anna Lewis, of course, Somewhere Lost in London, William Coles, Yvette Fielding, Dr. Jack Lewis, Neil Urry, Shane Rimmer, and your good self, Phil Innes, and in the studio, of course, Ben Lewis and Chloe Rose. Thank you, dear listener. That's it. Shall we go out with happy trails? What do you think, Phil? Or do you want to go happy
news?
Oh,
no. I mean, I love it. I love it. And I'll be listening to it later on my own. But we have to do trick or treat.
Oh, yeah, we do.
I think so. Okay, so a one, a two, a three.
Happy trails.
Trick or treat. Trick or treat.
Let's get it in order, Ben. We've got a few seconds. Let's use these seconds. A one, two, three.
Trick or treat.
Trick or treat.